I am Plata on the line in Vancouver. This is thecommentary.ca. Paul Wilcox joins me again. He is an editorial writer for the Victoria Times columnist and a longtime observer of political affairs in this province. His website is at wilcox.blogspot.com. We'll discuss the news of the last week, the resignation of Gordon Campbell as Premier of the province of British Columbia, as well as the leadership race to lead the Liberals and the state of the NDP and more. Please welcome back to the Plata on the Line program, Paul Wilcox. Good morning, Mr. Wilcox.
Good day.
Thanks for joining us.
Pleasure.
So how did this resignation come about? When the Premier says that, you know, it's to spend more time with his family, that they're getting off message, that it's about one person rather than a government, is that baloney?
No, it's not baloney. I'm sure that that's part of it. I mean, it's 17 years in provincial politics, plus the time as mayor before that. The idea of spending more time with your family, I'm sure, is quite appealing, and I'm sure the Premier also considers his personal unpopularity as a distraction. But the other reality is that he's so unpopular that he's dragging the party down, and he was beginning to get pressure. I'm not sure pressure to step down. I don't have that kind of insight into the Liberal caucus, but he was certainly getting pressure to make his intentions clear from within the party and from within the caucus. People, I guess the reality is they wanted to make sure that he wasn't serious about running again for 2013. And I think after the televised address bombed so horribly and was such an almost total failure, there really wasn't much alternative for him but to confirm he was going to go and figure out what the best way to do that was. And unfortunately, I think for the party, he's made a bit of a hash of that as well.
So this could be like a Chrétien going away, like it could be a year or more.
Well, it shouldn't be that long. The Liberal Party constitution says that once the leader said he's going, then the party executive has 4 weeks to meet, and they have to set a date for a leadership vote within 6 months of that meeting. So we're looking theoretically at a maximum of 6 or 7 weeks, but they've been caught badly off guard, and I don't really know how parties let this happen. They really haven't updated their leadership process, so it has, for example, very low spending limits, $75,000 for a leadership candidate, which really doesn't, you know, cover much of a provincial campaign. It's based on a one-member, one-vote process, at least in terms of the Constitution, so that anybody who signs up as a Liberal Party member more than 7 weeks before the date of the actual vote gets to cast a ballot. And it apparently contemplates sort of mail ballots with candidates being dropped after each round until somebody gets a majority. So, you know, it's all sort of as if the internet and those kinds of things didn't exist. And I understand the executive is looking at it now to see if there's a better way of conducting this leadership vote, a sort of a less damaging way, because it's quite a high-risk process at this point. If you do the one-member, one-vote thing, that's quite democratic, but it also creates the risk, as we've seen with past NDP campaigns and federal campaigns, of sort of mass sign-ups of instant party members who are from various interest communities, whether it's religious or ethnic or built around some issue, and that those can really distort the leadership process, and they give a huge advantage to people from the Lower Mainland, because if you're a candidate there, you can go up and with some work and some organization add 3,000 new members to the party who are all going to vote for you, which is much, much harder to do if you're in Prince George or somewhere like that.
Well, what's his legacy? What's Gordon Campbell's legacy?
I've been wondering that too, actually. I mean, the biggest legacy is probably being able to win 3 elections, which in British Columbia is no mean feat. Partly, I think, every premier's legacy is defined more in contrast, in part, to the person who succeeds them. So we'll have to wait to some extent to see his legacy. At this point, it would be winning 3 elections, cutting taxes, and cutting the size of budget of the government would probably be the things that I suspect he'll be remembered for. It's, you know, there's so many of the things that Gordon Campbell became enthusiastic about that it's hard to see enough substantial progress to really call it a legacy kind of issue. I mean, he certainly became passionate about climate change and about the need to reduce greenhouse gases, but then he seemed to sort of lose interest in that in the ensuing years. He became passionate about a new relationship with First Nations, but, you know, that hasn't perhaps gone as far as he anticipated, at least in terms of treaties. So I think the legacy is going to be focused on the tax-cutting side.
Has the province changed that much in the last 9 years, 10 years that he's been there?
Yes, it has. And that's a legacy thing, too. I think a lot of what British Columbians accepted as sort of the goals for government have been eroded, or those expectations have been under attack during the Campbell years. It did strike me that the Liberals came into power with some pretty clear goals. They thought the government was too big. They thought it was spending too much money, and they thought they launched it right away into that core review where they looked at all aspects of government to see what they could stop doing. Once they went through that process, for a lot of them, it was a little harder to figure out what to do next, because they're, you know, if fundamentally your position is that government is too big and shouldn't be doing nearly as much as it does, then you're sort of trapped into this, all you're doing is cutting. You don't really see a big role for government in making people's lives better or making communities more effective, more positive places. And, I think depending on the next Liberal leader, whoever gets the next sort of 2 years to go before the next election, the change at this point would be it's a harsher, tougher place for people to live, for an awful lot of people to live.
Was the unpopularity, we have short memories, so was he as unpopular as, say, other premiers, like during the Van der Zandt years, the Bennett years, say?
I can't cast that back that far. I think he probably, at least in poll numbers, he's remarkably unpopular, more so than Glenn Clark. But in terms of visceral public reaction to both a government and a leader, I still think that overall the NDP government of the late 90s was probably more despised, considered more incompetent, and probably in many ways more dishonest than the Liberal government is at this point. So that's a very funny way to rank governments, is sort of who is the least despised among us.
Yeah, so there's a leadership race now within the BC Liberal Party. Abbott Falcon. They seem to be the leading contenders within the cabinet, right?
I think so. Rich Coleman's certainly a serious contender if he decides that he wants to do it, and I thought his musings this week on the new drinking and driving laws sort of showed that that a campaign is at least on his mind, because that's the kind of freelancing I expect we're going to have over this ridiculous long goodbye situation that Gordon Campbell has created by sticking around as interim leader through this process. Probably Abbott, Coleman, Kevin Falcon, maybe Mary Pollock, he's certainly ambitious enough, and then, you know, people outside as well. I think part of the judgment right now that candidates have to go through is what exactly are they running for? Do they have a realistic chance of becoming Liberal Party leader and then winning an election and being the premier for the next 4 years? Or are they seeking a job which is going to see them sit in opposition for 4 years and then be replaced by someone else before the next election? So it's not quite the prize it would have been before the HST was introduced and before the Liberals hit such hard times.
What happens to the HST referendum now?
Well, that will be really interesting. I mean, my thought is that it will go ahead. I don't think, certainly that's what Gordon Campbell wants and expects, that, you know, he said all along he thinks the HST is the right thing, and he really, I thought, made a point at his press conference the day after he announced that he was stepping down, of trying to tie the hands of anybody who's in the government now who might choose to run for leader, because he was highly explicit when he was asked if he thought there'd be changes in party policy, was that no, anybody who's in cabinet or anybody who's in cabinet, caucus, has approved all these directions. They approved the HST. They were part of that decision. So his view is they can't go back now. Certainly a possibility that that a candidate could come forward, perhaps Blair Lexterman, say, you know, the right thing is to do is to cancel the referendum, cancel the tax, and look at it again in a year or two when we can explain it better. Certainly there's also the option, and I would sort of hope that the Liberals are at least thinking about this, of moving the referendum up from next September. I mean, economically that's damaging, but politically the timing now means that a new Liberal leader, a new Premier, could be selected in, we'll say, May, and then have 4 or 5 months either sitting on his hands while the HST debate goes on, or her hands, or trying to defend a tax that's already unpopular and starting out at a huge political disadvantage.
You mentioned earlier about candidates coming from the outside of the caucus, the current crop of MLAs. Two names that are prominent, Carol Taylor and Diane Watts. How serious is the talk about Carol Taylor?
I don't think it's serious. I think my impression was she was quite clear that this was not something she wanted to do at this point in her life, that she felt she'd given her time to politics. She's taken on the job as chancellor at Simon Fraser University, and I take that at face value. She's always been a pretty good person at saying what she what she thinks. And I don't think she found, well, I know she didn't find the provincial political process particularly satisfying. You know, it was a very combative, disrespectful way of people had with dealing with each other, and I'm not sure that that was something she enjoyed or would want to be part of further. I thought she made some telling comments when she took the Simon Fraser job and talked about not wanting to return to politics, in part because it wasn't a place where you could actually have a serious discussion about issues like health care and issues like that, because it immediately became bogged down in political fighting. And that's sad. I mean, this is where those kinds of issues are supposed to be discussed. But I think in many ways she's right, and that would affect her position.
And Diane Watts, is that a serious candidacy if it does happen?
Yeah, very much a serious candidacy. She's got a great reputation in Surrey as mayor, and in part because of an ability to bring people together and be more inclusive and be more respectful. She is from outside, which is, you know, extremely important for the Liberals at this thing. I really can't see the advantage of going with a candidate who's basically, if they're in cabinet now, they are tarnished with all the failures, all the perceived failures of the last several years of Liberal government, and it's going to make it awfully easy for the New Democrats and for a Conservative Party on the right, if one emerges, to say, well, this is the person who brought you the HST. This is the person who didn't consult with you. This is the person who was part of the process of promising that the deficit wouldn't be more than $500 million, and then it came to be almost $2 billion. So it's an awful lot of baggage to carry forward.
You know, this leadership speculation comes up getting kind of fun, because this morning we had Keith Martin announce his retirement. And so right away people are wondering if he's going to seek the leadership of the BC Liberal Party. James Moore, apparently, Alex Sakoumis was on this program yesterday saying that he's thinking about it. Do you think that's a possibility, someone from Ottawa, say?
It's remotely possible. The difficulty for them, not so much with Keith Martin, because he's belonged to so many different parties as an MP, but yeah, for someone like James Moore, one of the things Gordon Campbell has done extremely well is over a long period of time is keep the provincial Liberal Party, which is really a coalition of people who tend to fall into the federal conservative and federal liberal camps, to keep them united. And so there have been some fierce federal election campaigns in the province where those people have been at each other's throats over these 8 or 9 weeks leading into the election. And Gordon Campbell has been able to get them to put those differences aside and focus on provincial issues and bring the party together. So the difficulty in bringing in someone like James Moore is that he's going to have a much harder time convincing the sort of federal liberal wing of the provincial party that he's their kind of person and that he's the right choice to lead. So I suppose it's a possibility, but I'm not sure it's a transition any of those people would find easy or that desirable.
You mentioned that the conservative, like a party on the right, could emerge. And this sort of begs a question of where's the NDP in all of this?
I find the NDP a little baffling, I guess. I mean, to me, most parties in this kind of situation with a big lead in the polls, and a lead in the polls sort of large enough that an election were held today, they'd be elected with a really, really strong majority, would be sort of focusing on how they can build on what they've got, and the New Democrats have sort of thrown themselves into this attacks on Carol James' leadership from various riding and various kind of sniping around the province. And partly there's a little bit of a self-destructive streak within the NDP, I think. It's kind of like the old Reform used to be, that if they became too popular and too close to actually being successful politically, it seemed like some of their members think that means they've sold out or something and that they need to harden their position so that they're less popular. And I sometimes wonder about the New Democrats' capacity for infighting rather than focusing on ways to get ahead. So the attacks on James are serious. She certainly made some mistakes and created some problems, but it's pretty darn baffling when you're got a 2-to-1 poll margin lead over the current party. No guarantee at this point that the Liberals are going to select an inspiring leader, that at this time you're talking about changing your leader.
Bill Van Der Zem, he played a big role in the HST petition and the sort and getting that a lot of attention, the opposition to that. Do you think his legacy is rewritten, say, because of his part, however small that might be in this whole Gamble resignation?
It makes a very interesting footnote to his political biography,
yeah.
For sure. It ends it up on a much better note than leaving office under a cloud of scandal and with a pretty widely held view that your government was chaotic and unprincipled and hopelessly disorganized. So, yeah, I mean, he realistically he played a huge role in at least determining the timing of Gordon Campbell's departure. I mean, I think it was hard to imagine Gordon Campbell after the HST, even if it had been done properly, sticking around past 2013, but Van der Zandt's really, really successful and well-organized recall or initiative petition, I think, did sort of the major factor in just heaping the pressure on the Liberals on Campbell and making the resignation come now. So, you know, in terms of direct democracy, in terms of the kind of initiative process that Gordon Campbell in opposition was keen on, Van der Zandt showed that, to the surprise of a lot of people, that it could work.
Paul, I always enjoy talking to you, and I appreciate this today.
It's a pleasure.
The website for more, wilcox.blogspot.com. The Victoria Times columnist Paul Wilcox on the line from Victoria in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Planta.